All right, so I'm going to call in on the cell, and
Vinny has offered to record the conversation for those who can't make it today. So they've got a way of knowing what the background is quickly, and we can get it out to them.
So who else is on the phone? We were just going around into doing introductions. Has everyone been introduced?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Unfortunately, the others couldn't meet this morning.
All right.
So how is that?
Oh, that's much better, Vinny.
Okay.
Can everyone else hear Vinny okay, yeah?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's very good.
Should I start over?
Did you guys hear anything before?
I didn't really.
Okay. Yeah, welcome to the downside.
Yeah, welcome to the downside of voiceover internet. When it works, it's great. When it doesn't, it's not.
Obviously,
I'm the inventor of the Hexier and operator of the Hexier project.
My background is first software, then energy policy, and now this stuff.
And really, my main expertise is whole systems infrastructure design.
Actually getting all of these things, tools for rapidly mapping what needs to be done in a situation.
And then kind of maps of what kind of systems you can deploy to fill. And that's a whole set of models for building the entirety of human needs in a situation.
Of which obviously shelter is one of the primary ones.
Excellent, thank you. From what Andrew you were saying as well, we really want to discover what initially you want to be doing with this project, what the first aspect you want to talk about.
The immediate thing we need is structural engineering for Hexier to build a variety of materials.
And that is actually a really significantly non-trivial thing,
because it's actually a very much more complex structure than it initially appears.
If it's made using the approach where you use a soft panel, which is basically a modified polystyrene, that's polyisocyanurate, if you can pull that kind of stuff.
Then the primary structural anchor in the building at that point is actually the tape that holds it together.
So the tape forms a tensile harness.
And the panels are essentially hanging off this tensile harness by the adhesive force of the tape, but also through their own edge to edge connection, giving you this compression element as well.
And those structures, in what amounts to polystyrene and packing tape,
those structures have successfully held at 80 mile an hour winds.
So what's going on there is that the packing tape has filaments in it.
So it's got a breaking strain of something like 300 or 400 kilograms. You have 12 straps of that tape that comprise the structural frame of the building.
And obviously when you've got some tan and a half of tie down force,
it's not going to go anywhere until panel failure.
But figuring out, actually doing an analysis of how it will break, when it will break, and what happens if you change the material parameters.
It's not easy.
Because you have to model both the failure of the panels, the failure of the adhesives, and the failure of the tape in the tensile way.
As well as things like ground pegs tearing out, which turns out to be the typical mode of failure when they do go down. We actually had guy lines breaking, which is the big issue.
So that's just kind of a hairy problem.
Then on top of that, there's this whole question of plywood.
Because if you build the tensile elements with metal.
So then you've got basically a stressed skin building, which is a whole other ball of wax.
It's almost certainly a different analysis.
And what you're doing there is the entire plywood skin acting as a membrane.
And again, your plywood membrane, what are your modes of failure there? And what happens, you cut the angles on the board before you join them. Although it's not a terrible complicated structure, its actual behavior, structural level, is probably pretty complicated.
The real reason is wind load and snow load numbers.
We just don't know, particularly for the plywood hex here, what the safety margins are in terms of snow load handling.
And cold weather disaster is a big part of the reason that the NGOs need an upgrade to the pen.
It's just a mess.
So if it turns out the plywood hex here has sufficient snow load performance,
at that point you can suggest, here's the plywood hex here, insulate it with whatever you have on hand.
Here's the basic frame, and you're talking about three to four hundred dollars worth of materials for a building that might be really fairly permanent or durably semi-permanent if it can handle those kind of snow loads.
The other thing is we've got another version which has a 48 degree roof slope rather than the 30 degree roof slope of the normal building.
And then it gets into running the snow calculations of what kind of accumulation are you going to get in which kind of climate, which model is appropriate, and it really is getting this kind of structural understanding of how the building relates to snow in a range of materials. And having a framework there where we can come back with a candidate material and say, if we use this stuff, what's it going to do?
I mean, it sounds like basically what you're after is something that's going to be a means of optimizing your materials and to some extent slightly your profile with regards to, like you were saying, the roof slope in order to make it the most effective structure it can to, you know, resisting those that snow and wind and making it sort of, you know, less susceptible to higher loadings as a result of that. I mean obviously the inclination of the roof is always a bonus in terms of reducing any loading on the top, but also then you may end up with more problems with drifting. But I mean it's certainly something that we can sort of think about here, but also we have other sort of contacts who do things like sort of CFD modelling, and it might be something that we get them involved with, because obviously from their point of view, I mean, this is what they do sort of day in, day out, and their expertise is greater than ours. But yeah, I mean, that all sounds interesting, so it's certainly something we can sort of potentially help with.
Well, that would be great. So much of it's about trying to come up with the sort of envelope of operation of the building. Because at this point, we've got a bunch of field test results, all for different desert climates. We've got three or four buildings which have been left up for a year or two here and there,
one of which failed spectacularly for reasons that we still don't entirely understand.
So, being able to get a rough estimate would be a really good place to start, even with the field testing program. If you come back and say, well, we think you've got the ability to withstand 15 pounds of snow a square foot. American and metrics, then we can start looking for places that have that kind of snow profile, and know that we're testing at something close to the limit of the tolerances, so afterwards we can say, well, you know, either worked or it didn't, that kind of stuff, to be able to say to the NGOs, here's our theoretical performance,
here's the places where you're out of options for 10,
these are the regions that we should be field testing specifically.
Vinny, it's Andrew here. You're in the process, it sounds like to me, of searching for the right sort of materials that are low cost materials, relatively lightweight and easy to transport and so on. Is that right?
Yes, there's a couple of different angles to the materials question. The first is what you do if somebody wants to mass manufacture and then stockpile.
So at that point,
you've got the full range of materials available, and that's fairly off the shelf.
Yes, that product engineering question, right?
The more interesting problem is what can you do with the materials that are available in different parts of the world?
So you're taking things directly out of the industrial supply chain.
And if you want to get real volume, then it's going to be something that people are already using for something else.
And typically that's either insulation board, plywood, or packaging materials.
So being able to take a sample of something that people have locally, do a little testing on it, and then predict from a numerical model roughly what its field performance will be.
It could be very useful in terms of qualifying local materials that are already in their industrial supply chain for emergency use.
Yes. So there are all sorts of optimization issues here. One is low cost, one is local availability, potentially, one is strength, and the different types of strength, I suppose, durability. So, I just wonder whether it's worthwhile just opening up that question for a minute, just to say, is it the most helpful thing to you, is it to test plywood for snow load, or is it actually to look at a range of materials that would find a way to build a model that would allow you quickly to test a range of materials given that you know certain of their characteristics.
I think there are really very different spans of analytical frameworks for dealing with the plywood type material, the material itself is very strong,
and the whole shell is essentially a single piece, and dealing with the framework where you mean to be using the tape to hold the building together.
I think they're going to turn out to be very different models, but they're certainly going to turn out to a very different performance.
Realistically, in terms of mass production, and this sounds a little harsh, but realistically, in terms of mass production,
if somebody's going to be using things like honeycomb plastics in the skin distance, then they're probably coming to the table as a commercial operator that wants to manufacture excerts on a for-profit basis.
At that point, they can get their own damn engineering.
The critical issue is really plywood, because it's very likely globally available. And right now we don't know whether it can deal with the snow. So if we only need a single spike to drive into the problem, it's figuring out the performance of plywood.
Then if we had more resources to put behind that, it'd be wonderful to have a general analytical framework where we can just punch in the numbers and have something come back. But my feeling is that it's going to turn out to be one of those things where you wind up with two or three classes of materials, so there's stuff where it's primarily a tensile structure,
and then there's materials like plywood where it turns into a stressed skin.
And it may turn out that we wind up with one of those, but I think it's more likely we'll wind up with two separate models,
and a fair amount of guesswork at the edges, because it's just kind of a weird buildup.
Let me ask the question a different way.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other materials? I mean, plywood, you're making the point that it's universally available. Are there any other materials that, that are universally available that you have considered and rejected? Well, in the United States, there's a ton of this kind of foam board material, polyisocyanate, there's a fair amount of that in Europe.
In South America, they've got a very thin, hardboard material which they use a lot of, and it's really cheap, good for small units.
We don't have any kind of accurate information about what's available in Vulcan Africa. And obviously China has damn near anything you can want in near infinite quantities. So one of the things is that we know there's a very large panel industry in China, so there's probably a lot of options to use materials there. So we don't have any kind of comprehensive global map of materials availability.
And it, having that map
would be extremely useful. And if we actually had, five years down the line, if we had a comprehensive map of roughly what materials were available in which regions and roughly what quantity correlated with the results from either field testing or structural analysis, that would be the goal state, absolutely.
And where do you expect, you know, most demand for hexayotes to come from in the long run? Where would you?
It's definitely a phased thing.
Right now, we've got something like 20 million refugees, and the majority of whom are in living conditions which would be significantly improved by Hexier without putting them in a condition of being in permanent housing which puts them under political pressure.
So there's a lot of that stuff in South America,
but the majority of that is Africa. Then the next ring around that is essentially weather disasters.
Also earthquakes, natural disaster in general.
So that stuff is inherently unpredictable, and more than half of it is flooding.
Once again in South America.
Some in Africa, China, Bangladesh, every couple of years, 3-4 million people displaced, the whole hurricane belt.
There's just a lot,
and it's all kind of unpredictable.
In general, Hexier is much more appropriate for poor countries than rich ones. Because you can't necessarily expect Japanese people to Hexier and leave them there for six months. So what we're looking for is this kind of sweet spot where you've got a relatively poor region which is a significant industrial base.
So you could take anything within a week's drive of South Africa, the big industrial cities of Brazil and Mexico, anything within a week's drive of the big industrial cities in China or India.
And I think that's working out from the industrial base.
So, just to come back to the snow point again, how many of these locations that you're talking about now are really snowbound? I mean, on the snow side of it, the issue is not that it's where you're going to see a lot of Hexier deployed, it's where there's basically no other option right now.
So although it's not a large percentage of customers, for example, in the Pakistan earthquake, they had 300,000 people displaced in areas where the disaster relief tent just wouldn't stand up. So they shipped people the tents, fellow, and they went out with a variety of improised options, and just nothing worked. And finally they wound up with half sections of corrugated steel pipe, which were insanely heavy, had no thermal properties, but at least didn't collapse under the snow.
And all the way through that period, we were kind of emailing people like, hey, you might want to think about this, and we never found an entry point to that.
So next time it would be very nice to go in with our structural engineering numbers.
Here are our field tests. Go around all the major response NGOs, this is your cold weather option. Here is our data.
Train your people, make sure you understand what you're doing.
Figure out who your response folks are on the ground in cold weather areas and get them trained.
So the next time we have Pakistan, we don't have this farce.
We don't know how many people died in Pakistan because they had no really decent cold climate shelter response.
But the number is not none.
Okay, good. Well, that's a very helpful survey. It's probably a bit of a diversion, but it helps us all understand why the snow loading is so important.
Oh yeah, not a diversion at all.
This kind of context stuff is really the critical questions.
Because the thing in itself is not particularly difficult.
It's not a very hard technology for people to understand.
But the context which makes it necessary is really, really hairy.
The politics and history of disaster relief and the NGOs and the resistance to innovation and all the rest of that stuff are really critical.
Why don't we come back then to the practical stuff of what can be done to help you?
Absolutely.
So we have a notion about doing some structural modeling. Thermal modeling would be great as well.
Again, the cold weather thing, how much heat you need to put into the building based on a variety of materials and external climate conditions to maintain a reasonable interior temperature.
I guess, where do we proceed?
What are the inputs to that part of the process?
I mean, it sounds like from our point of view, I mean, we could sort of liaise with people in order to develop an initial model. We can do some, have an initial look at the sort of type of numbers we're talking about with respect to loadings as well, mm-hmm. And run the idea past some of our sort of external sort of people that we would normally go to for advice with regards on those matters, and just sort of get a steer from them at this initial stage. I mean, it does sound like there's a decision. I mean, I know what you're saying about making sort of, it's probably two different solutions to this, depending on the conditions. You sort of got this, like you say, a stressed skin structure, or you've got a primarily tensile structure. That's something we can look into. I think that needs to be worked up in conjunction with material options. I mean, obviously, we can have an initial look at just the structural system, so the compressive panels and then the panels which don't have any rigidity in that sense, just to give us a bit of a steer. But obviously, then we'd need to develop that with, defined materials in mind, in order to give us a bit more of a real answer to the problem. But that's something that can sort of be ongoing, so that's certainly doable from our perspective.
Another question. I mean, we've talked about snow load and thermal load and so on. What about wind? I mean, is wind an issue in these snowy areas?
From my experience with the Concrete Canvas project, wind is actually quite a significant problem. The two quite often come in pairs as well. So if you've got snow and wind sort of tend to combine, and then you actually get a combination which actually is even worse. So that's another consideration, and that's where it's getting the balance with the building profile, so as to make it not as susceptible to wind by giving it too large a sort of an elevation, so to speak. But also, you also want to give it sort of a roof that has the profile which doesn't, basically reduces any chance of snow drifting in that wind condition. So it's trying to get the balance between the two. So there may be a little bit of tweaking required with regards to the actual form of the structure. But I mean, having looked at, the base form would stay the same. It would literally just be sort of trying to just get the roof, just optimise that slightly. But yeah, the two, you do need to consider both of those. Yeah, they're both key things. Thank you.
Fantastic. So I guess the question of liaising and getting you the plans and what I understand about the structural stuff so far.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we can sort of work from that, and obviously that can sort of be an ongoing thing where, we can sort of have that dialogue with you as to what we're modelling, how we're representing various things, if we've got any suggestions with regards to alternatives, getting those across to you and getting some feedback.
We've really been looking for somebody to do this work for years. two or three years, this question has been What is the parameter?
I mean, out of interest, what's the? I know they were saying there were some people involved from UCL and Oxford. What sort of roles? What sort of roles are they? Are they structural engineers or are they more sort of materials and?
Yeah, I think they were structural engineers and were interested in that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
They are still interested in getting involved, therefore when I've written up this summary, I'd like to pass it on to them and still get them involved.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps when we have our next meeting, they can go an idea and discuss it further.
Mm-hmm.
They were interested more in the structural side of things.
Yeah. Okay.
I can pass you their details.
Yeah, I mean, that would be fantastic, because it may be a case that, I mean, obviously being academic institutions, they tend to have much, their computing power tends to be immense, so it may be something that they can, we can sort of all work together to actually utilise who's got the best, resources for tackling it.
Excellent, yeah. So when I summarise it, I shall pass all the information and all the contact information to you as well. Did I pass you the summary of last time's meeting? Because I know you weren't involved.
I do remember. I don't remember seeing anything in detail. I think there was sort of a brief what was discussed, but I remember you saying that you sort of didn't manage to cover as much as everyone wanted. I think there was sort of a brief summary.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, can I suggest it might be helpful. It's Louise, is it? Olivia.
Victoria.
You seem to sort of have immediately grasped what needs to be done here, Victoria, and I'm just wondering whether there's a follow-up to this meeting to make sure we make as much progress as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. We do two things. One, we obviously, Vinay, you've got the recording. It would be nice to have a transcript of that, and then we could just like summarise that in some way. Maybe Nikki could do that.
Sure. Yeah.
Just so that we can then circulate that to all the interested parties. And Victoria, I'm just wondering whether you could do a project description or a project plan.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one page of what the problem is and what we need to do to deal with it.
As almost
a sort of a project proposal to the next meeting, which I think it'd be good to have even within the next 2 weeks. Just to get some momentum behind this and really to push it forward.
That's fine.
Obviously, our role at Science for Humanity is just to facilitate this and try and get some momentum and get a group of people who are enthusiastic to help.
So
would you be able to do that, Victoria?
Certainly. I can drive something up just so that we've got something, like you say, as a basis for progress. So yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Excellent. And Nikki, you should organise, I guess, our next call, which, even today it might be good to call the other people who couldn't come and just tell them what we're doing and get their commitment to potential dates in the next 2 weeks so that we can really push this forward. Let's not lose the momentum we've already got on this call.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I'll do that. Okay, does anyone have any other questions for now? And I'd just say thank you to everyone for attending. And we've made real progress on the call, so I'm really happy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Kalia. No worries.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. See you, bye.
Take care. Have a good day.
Hello?
Just me.
Hi, Benny.
All right, let me turn off this recording.